Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to As It Is. I'm June Sims in Washington. Have you ever imagined what the world was like when dinosaurs ruled the Earth? Today, we look at a movie that is letting audiences experience what this might have been like. First, two recent studies looked at the effect music can have on severely ill people. VOA's Richard Paul reported on the results of those studies. We hear more about that story coming up. Hospitals employ many therapeutic methods. In addition to medication, there are interventions like massage therapy and hypnosis. Music therapy is also growing in popularity. Sandra Sidlecki is a senior scientist at the Nursing Institute of Cleveland Clinic in Ohio. She says music is a low-cost treatment.
There's a couple reasons for music. One, it's very inexpensive.
And she says scientists have done a lot of research on music's effect on pain.
Especially Dr. Marion Good, who did an awful lot on acute pain in music.
In those studies, as in many others, patients listen to relaxing music like this. Dr. Good found that her surgery patients took fewer pain drugs when they listened to music. Dr. Sidlecki says taking fewer drugs is helpful because the side effects linked to pain medicines can outweigh their value.
You get to the point where one more pill and the side effects aren't quite worth it.
Dr. Good's study looked at short-term pain. However, chronic pain, the kind that just will not go away, is also a common problem.
People with chronic pain feel powerless. They've already tried everything. There's no choices left. So they feel powerless to do anything that's going to make it better.
Dr. Sidlecki was looking at ways to treat that sense of powerlessness, as well as patients' depression, disability, and pain. Dr. Linda Klein was studying something else. She was not interested in patients' pain, but instead their anxiety or extreme worry. Dr. Klein is a professor of symptom management research in the nursing school at Ohio State University. She has spent a lot of time with people who are in the hospital because their anxiety is so great that they cannot breathe. People with this condition often have to use breathing machines. Dr. Klein says that sometimes medication does little to ease their condition.
I was always struck by the profound distress that these patients experience, regardless of the amount of medications that we gave them.
It was not just that the medicines did not work. Sometimes they made things worse.
Sometimes they would get more anxious and more anxious.
And just as in the case of Dr. Sitlecki's pain patients, the drugs the anxiety patients were taking have unwanted side effects.
We had two primary aims of this study, to reduce anxiety as well as sedative exposure. If they can control a non-pharmacological intervention in the form of relaxing preferred music, can that have a beneficial effect?
Dr. Klein had nurses remind patients that music was another choice to ease their symptoms. They also placed signs near the patient's beds.
Listen to your music at least twice today.
Another group in Dr. Klein's study used noise-canceling headphones with no music. A third group received standard care. Dr. Sitlecki's study also had three groups. One group listened to music from past studies. Another group was able to pick its own music. The third group received traditional treatment. Dr. Sitlecki says the results were positive in both studies.
When you look at it overall, power, pain, depression, and disability as a group improved in the music groups.
Dr. Klein's study looked to decrease the intensity of the drugs people had to take and how often they took them. She also found that music worked. The people who listened to music needed fewer doses and had a 36% reduction in the intensity or the amount of medication they received. In addition, their anxiety decreased by about 36%. Both doctors had similar explanations for why music was so successful.
Music operates on many levels. It can be a very powerful distractor in the brain where we're listening to something that's pleasing and then it interrupts stressful thoughts.
Music can be a distraction. And if you're doing something you enjoy, time seems to go by faster.
These doctors seem to agree with the line from the old Bob Marley song, Trenchtown Rock. It says, "One good thing about music, when it hits you, you feel no pain."
One good thing about music, when it hits you,
you feel no pain.
You are listening to As It Is. From VOA Learning English, I'm June Sims. The film called Walking with Dinosaurs is a story that mixes entertainment with science. The actors who performed the voices of the characters say they found themselves learning more about the ancient creatures as they made the movie. Jim Tedder reports.
The 3D film is set in Alaska during the late Cretaceous period, 70 million years ago. A media event at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles had an actor in a dinosaur costume and three of the film's stars, including John Leguizamo. He stood beside the oversized dinosaur.
You're not scared?
Leguizamo says the movie was well researched. The settings were partly filmed in Alaska, and the computer-generated dinosaurs include a plant-eating species called Pachyrhinosaurus. The film follows a herd of Pachyrhinosaurs, creatures with large bony skulls, and a young member of the tribe named Patchy. Leguizamo is the voice of a smaller creature named Alex. In the film, he congratulates a Pachyrhinosaur couple on their newly hatched baby.
Well, look what we have here. Allow me to congratulate you on this happiest of occasions.
Tia Serkar voices a female Pachyrhinosaur. She says the science behind the film interested her.
I actually, for a lot of my like elementary school years, thought that I would be an archaeologist or a paleontologist when I grew up. That did not happen as of yet. I mean, who knows?
Skylar Stone, the voice behind a character named Scowler, also learned something while making the movie.
There were dinosaurs I'd never heard of. I was like, wait a minute. They're like, yeah, we just discovered these ones. I'm like, what? This is crazy.
Walking with Dinosaurs is based on a popular science series on the BBC. Some critics say the TV series was better than the film. But Luis Chiappe disagrees. He heads the Natural History Museum's Dinosaur Institute and advised the filmmakers. He says films like this one get kids involved in science.
They stimulate them to come to a place like this, to the Natural History Museum, to see the real thing. So they're fun, they're educational, and they're inspirational.
And he likes the story. I'm Jim Tedder.
And that is As It Is. Thanks for sharing your day with us. I'm June Sims. Enjoy your day.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. When a grain becomes popular worldwide, there are two main effects. Farmers who grow the grain earn more in profits, and people who use it for food pay more. Quinoa, a grain native to South America, has become popular in many areas in recent years. In fact, the United Nations General Assembly approved a declaration making 2013 the International Year of the Quinoa. Quinoa is a traditional food crop in the Andes Mountains. The plant grows in an area near Lake Titicaca, along the border of Peru and Bolivia. Historical evidence shows that local people were growing quinoa as far back as 5,000 to 7,000 years ago. During this period, they used both the seeds and leaves of this wild plant. There are many kinds of quinoa. The plant can be grown in different climates, and it does not require a lot of water. Both the seeds and leaves can be used as food. The seed is the most commonly used part. Quinoa can be ground into flour or cooked whole. It is used in cereals, drinks, and fresh salads. It can also be mixed with vegetables or beans for a full meal. The leaves and stems can also be used for medicinal purposes. Some people use them to reduce pain, heal wounds, and even keep insects away. Quinoa is full of amino acids and minerals. Amino acids are organic compounds that form protein. The body needs them to help break down food and to grow and repair tissue. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization believes that quinoa can be used to fight hunger and feed a growing world population. The reason is the high value of protein provided by quinoa. The crop has also become popular among those seeking healthier ways to eat. The center of the seed contains up to 45% protein. Quinoa is currently grown in more than 70 countries. Peru and Bolivia together produce 92% of the crop. The rest comes mainly from the United States, Ecuador, Canada, and Argentina. Starting about 10 years ago, the popularity of quinoa caused its price to rise quickly. Many Bolivian farmers have gained from this increase by earning more. They have been able to buy vehicles and other goods with the increased profits. However, other Bolivians have had to give up their main food because it costs too much. Instead, they are buying and cooking with other foods that are not as rich in healthy minerals and proteins. And that's the Agriculture Report from VOA Learning English. You can find more agriculture stories at our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. You can also leave comments at our website or email them to us at learningenglish at voanews.com. I'm Christopher Cruz.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm June Sims.
And I'm Jim Tedder. Today on the program, we tell about developments in space exploration. We tell about an American decision to extend the life of the International Space Station. We also tell about the American Space Agency's Mars rover Opportunity and new findings from the Red Planet. We have a report about what appear to be high-energy particles from outside our solar system. But first, we report on plans for an unusual map.
A man-made satellite called Gaia started a long trip late last year. The satellite was designed to travel more than 1 million kilometers from Earth. Scientists are hoping that Gaia will take pictures of our galaxy, the Milky Way. They plan to use the pictures to create the first three-dimensional, or 3D, map of the Milky Way. It will show the height, depth, and width of stars and other large recognizable objects. The satellite weighs 2 tons. It was launched on a Russian Soyuz rocket last December from the European Space Agency's center in French Guiana. Gaia rose quickly and soon began orbiting the Earth. It then deployed a 10-meter-large circular sun shield. The device is keeping instruments on the satellite, including 2 telescopes, cool on the long trip. The scientists hope to use the telescope to study distant stars. Gaia was designed to be mechanically stable. That is why the satellite has so few moving parts. In addition, its temperature must not change very much.
Mark McCorkran is the chief scientist for the Gaia mission. He says the information Gaia gathers will help scientists understand how our galaxy developed, how it looks today, and how it may change.
It'll measure the positions of 1 billion stars, but also their speeds, their motions. And with that, we can run a movie of the Milky Way. We can run it forwards into the future, how the Milky Way will develop by looking at all the stars and how they move. But we can run it backwards as well, and we can see how the Milky Way actually formed in the first place.
Gerard F. Gilmore is with the Institute of Astronomy at England's Cambridge University. He says the 3D images will one day show half of the Milky Way. He says the map will provide new knowledge about what keeps the galaxy together.
And the particular interest that I have in here locally is in the nature of dark matter. What is dark matter made of? So dark matter is most of the weight in the Milky Way. It's dark matter that holds the Milky Way together. If there weren't all this dark material, our sun would fly off away from the galaxy. The whole galaxy would fall apart.
Scientists expect the satellite to operate for 5 years in an area about 1.5 million kilometers from Earth. It will take about 70 pictures of each of the 1 billion stars in the Milky Way. The mission is expected to cost about $1.3 billion.
The United States Space Agency has announced plans to keep the International Space Station operating until 2024. The $100 billion space station has already been in service for 15 years. It was supposed to halt operations in 2020. The Space Agency and the Obama administration say extending the life of the space station will help the U.S. and its international partners meet several goals. These include scientific research and giving private businesses time to fully take responsibility for transporting shipments and crew to low Earth orbit. One of the private companies is Orbital Sciences Corporation. It sent a supply flight to the space station in early January. The space agency retired the last of its space shuttles in 2011. Since then, it has been using Orbital Sciences and another company, SpaceX, to transport supplies to the space station. It has also been getting support from Russia. Flight crews are brought to the space station on Russian Soyuz spacecraft.
The U.S. Space Agency says its Mars rover vehicle, Opportunity, is still working more than 10 years after arriving on the Red Planet. Opportunity landed on Mars on January 24, 2004, several weeks after another rover vehicle called Spirit. NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, says one of Opportunity's six wheels and two instruments stopped working long ago. But those are minor problems when you think about how long the project was supposed to last, just 3 months. Spirit stopped sending signals in 2010 after getting stuck in sand.
Opportunity has traveled about 39 kilometers on the planet's surface. NASA scientists say the rover continues making new discoveries. It recently overturned a rock so that its bottom was exposed to the Martian atmosphere for the first time in perhaps billions of years. Early discoveries by the two rovers showed the planet may have at one time been much warmer and wet. And recently, Opportunity found geologic evidence of water in an area called the Endeavour Crater. Scientists believe the discovery could help them find places other than the Earth, where simple life forms could have survived.
New research shows mineral-eating organisms could have lived on Mars. Scientists say this is the best evidence yet that the planet could once have supported life forms. Last year, scientists reported evidence of water on Mars. In the latest research, the Mars rover vehicle Curiosity found two minerals, iron and sulfur, in different chemical states at the bottom of a former lake. The finding is important because the different states suggest that electrons could move around in that environment. Scott McLennan is a professor of geoscience at Stony Brook University in New York.
If you can move electrons around, you've basically got food.
Professor McLennan is part of the Mars rover team that made the discovery.
In principle, you could have microbes that could eat the rocks and eat the minerals, and that's very common on Earth. They're primitive life forms, but they're very, very well known and very well characterized.
Such life forms are found in dark caves and deep-sea thermal vents on Earth. These areas do not get the sunlight that is the root of all life on our planet's surface.
Hap McSween is a planetary science professor at the University of Tennessee. He says recent research papers claimed there could be life on Mars. Professor McSween was not involved in the recent study. He says it is not the first time researchers have found water or important minerals on Mars.
But never the whole package. And this place really does seem to have the whole package.
The materials were found near the place where Curiosity landed. The area appears to have been a lake about 4 billion years ago. Professor McSween notes that was around the time life was appearing on Earth.
It could be that the two planets had emerging but very, very simplified life at the same time. But we're a long way from figuring out that this interesting lake deposit actually has any evidence for life.
Sensing equipment buried deep in the Antarctic ice has found evidence of high-energy particles from outside our solar system. IceCube is the name of a device operating in Antarctica. It has more than 5,000 light sensors buried as deep as 2 kilometers below the surface. IceCube has been called the world's largest particle detector searching for neutrinos.
Neutrinos are unimaginably small particles. They travel from the sun or Earth's own atmosphere at near light speed. Billions of them pass through us every second. But these are low-energy neutrinos. They are not what interest the 250 scientists from 11 countries working with information from IceCube. Francis Halzin is the lead investigator on the project and a physics professor at the University of Wisconsin. He says IceCube is looking in the ice for high-energy neutrinos from outside the solar system.
What we want to see is a handful of events sent to us by the universe we have finally discovered, though.
When the neutrinos mix with atoms inside the deep ice instruments, they sometimes give off small amounts of light. In 2010, scientists discovered 2 high-energy neutrinos. 2 years later, they found 26 more, including the most energetic neutrinos ever observed.
Nathan Whitehorn is a physicist at the University of Wisconsin. He also is working on the IceCube project. He says the discovery of the 26 neutrinos after finding the first 2 was very important.
It was almost impossible without more data and data at lower energies to be sure that these 2 neutrinos that we found were part of a larger pattern indicating an extraterrestrial population instead of some statistical fluke.
Neutrinos have almost no mass or weight and no electric charge. That is why the Earth's magnetic fields have no effect on them. Neutrinos move quickly and in a straight line through the solar system. That movement is very different from electrically charged cosmic rays. Professor Whitehorn says the lack of an electric charge in neutrinos means they can help scientists find where cosmic rays came from.
We expect that anything that's making high-energy cosmic rays, the most energetic phenomena in the universe, whatever they are, will make neutrinos at the same time. And if we're able to identify the origin of these high-energy neutrinos, it'll provide some very powerful clues about the origin of the highest-energy cosmic rays.
Scientists have been attempting to solve this mystery for more than a century. They hope these extraterrestrial messengers will help them do that.
This Science in the News was written and produced by Christopher Cruz. I'm Jim Tedder.
And I'm June Sims. Join us again next week at this time for more news about science on The Voice of America.